Blog Talk Radio.
This song right here is to that person. I don't even mention his name. They said I couldn't do nothing without him.
Who are you to tell?
Welcome. Good evening. This is Real Talk with Regina Bree, and I am your host today with Real Talk, and it is going to be one of the best shows we have done in a long, long time. This show is about the upcoming election, and the question today he poses is this one of the most important elections in the upcoming 100 years. And today I'm going to be joined by one of my favorite people in the whole entire world, Ms. Felicia Sims Williams. She is our resident political analyst, and we're going to be chopping it up. I'm so excited. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you, Ms. Felicia Sims Williams. Hey, Felicia.
Hello, Regina. How are you today?
I am excited to be here. I'm excited to have you, girly. I am, this is one of the most, I know funnest is not a word, but this is going to be one of the most funnest shows I've done in a long time because for my audience,
right.
Felicia and I go way back. A lot of ways back, don't we? We go
to the dungeon. To the dungeon and back.
So without further ado, I want you to tell my audience a little bit about yourself and how you became the political analyst for Real Talk with Regina Bree. So I'm going to turn it over to you and just tell us a little bit about yourself so my audience can start to love on you as I do.
Okay, and my name is Felicia Sims Williams, and Regina and I go back to, I think, third grade, and so we have been friends for a very, very long time. But to tell you a little bit about me, I live in a good old town of Valdosta, Georgia. I'm originally from Atlanta, by way of DeKalb County, Decatur, Towers High School, and so that's where I started, that's where I got my roots. I'm a Grady baby. So I'm truly from Atlanta. I have my degree in psychology. So I have a Bachelor of Science in Psychology, a Master of Science in Psychology, with an emphasis in life coaching, as well as I am currently working on my doctorate in adult education. And so I have been very busy, but one thing I do spend my time doing is looking at politics, looking at what is going on in the world of politics, and having my little Facebook conversation with friends and family regarding this election. And so I am grateful and glad to be here to talk about this election and as far as coronavirus and how it has affected our community and what our president has done or not done to help us in this point in time in our lives.
Right, exactly. So we're just going to hop right in it. So the question of the day, Felicia, is this, in your opinion, the most important election in the last 100 years?
Oh, absolutely. I was looking at something today, and while I was watching a person crying on TV or on their video, and I can't think of the gentleman's name right now. It slipped my mind, and I'm 53, y'all, so sometimes that happens. But it slipped my mind who it was. But he was crying based on the long line of African Americans in his town that was voting. Now, mind you, the polls had been open 27 minutes, as it stated in his blog. And I'm going to try to find that name while we're talking. And within that 27 minutes that the polls were open, the lines were very, very long. And he cried. That speaks volumes, that a black man in today's world will cry because the line is long for the election. That tells you that how imperative it is that we as a black people get out and vote. Or, as a matter of fact, it just tells you how imperative it is of this election. This election has called people to get out and vote. This election is the most important election. Because right now, what we have in office, we cannot continue to do this.
No, we can't. And here's the thing. I've heard so many young people say, I'm not going to vote for or against because I don't like either one of the candidates. But what you don't understand is not having a vote casted is not having a voice. Because the two candidates are present, that's your choice. So you vote for no other reason, the lesser of two evils. And even if that doesn't compel you to vote, you should vote because there are your ancestors, people of our heritage, who died for this right, for you to be able to walk in the polls, push, 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 bing, bing, I'm done. They died for the right for you to have this. So if out of respect, if it's just out of sheer respect for the ancestors who walked before you and thought this was important enough to lay, there are some things in this world that I would not lay my life down for. And some of our ancestors thought this particular thing was so important that they would lose their life over for you to have the right to do that. So I think that, and the reason why is because this president, he didn't start racism. He just gave them permission to vocal about what they felt. Because before this president, everybody stayed in their place, whether you liked it or not.
That's right.
Whether you cared for white people or whether you cared for black people or Jewish people or whatever it was, that was your personal opinion. You kept that to yourself. Right? You moved on through life and we did what we needed to do. Now, are we saying that we didn't, that systemic racism was not available? No, that's not what we're saying. But what we're saying is for a modicum of us, life could go on peaceably between the two. Now, what you said is, I posed a question, and I'm going to ask you the same question. I was on a committee, and I asked the question because there was a mixed race of people. When was America great for us? I said, was it the Reconstruction period?
Great
Was it the Jim Crow era? Was it Reconstruction? Was it the Civil Rights Movement? Was it when was it great for us? And nobody can answer that question. So when he said, make America great for us, he's not talking about you and me. He's talking about them when we were subservient to them, when we were free labor, when they can make monies off the backs of our labor. So I pose the question. When this president, 45, is sitting in office and people are walking around with the MAGA hats on, make America great again, what does that say to you? When was it great for us?
Hey, it was never great for us in the aspect of what he's talking about. It was Roland Martin that was the one who cried. He cried on video today when he saw the long line of people that was in line to vote. He cried, a black man crying, just because he saw the significance of this race, the significance of this time, of this election. And the thing about it is that we need our people to see the significance of what's going on. Now, not only that, we need to see it, but guess what? We need to reach out and tell somebody. We need to reach out and touch somebody. Take five. Take five people with you to vote, because it is important. Because they're great. Making America great again is for them. It's not for us. But if we sit back on our do-nothings and do nothing, then we're going to find ourselves in the same position that we were a long time ago. Now, people will say this. People will say, we'll never go back to slavery. We'll never go back to the way it used to be. You're right. Some things that we'll never go back to. But some things will take us back, because if you don't vote, they will have people or things in the addendums on the ballot that could take you back to places that you don't want to go, take you to things that you don't want to do. And that's one thing about Roland Martin in his video, in his cry, in his tears. Another video he shared, He had a T-shirt. He said, "No vote, no voice. No vote, no voice." Because if you don't vote, you have no voice as to say anything about what's going on right now.
Exactly.
This vote,
exactly.
This year is imperative that we get out and vote.
Exactly. We have a caller. So, caller, the last number is 3170. Caller with the last number 3170. Hi, caller. You're on the air with Real Talk. How are you? Caller with the last digit. Hi, caller.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can. We can hear you.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. Well, you know, well, I wanted to, in adding to this, the points that have been made, you know, I love what Felicia said in regards to the, you know, regarding Roland Martin's no vote, no voice. I mean, you really think about it, our not voting, that puts us back into a position where we are allowing systematic racism to happen to us again, all over again. Well, it hasn't stopped, so just it'll be a continued cycle of systematic racism.
That's right.
You know, similar to, you know, all the way we talk about Jim Crow, but when you look at, you know, we've had some development. However, how much development has there been? We still have issues getting the financial support that we need in our neighborhood. We still have issues getting the educational support. Think about even housing. Okay, so with housing, yes, you have, you know, yeah, you get more loans, but let's be honest. Are they really giving us the more loans? Or are they really, you know, are all the doors really open? We have to get out. We have to vote. We have to make sure that we are busting wide every door of opportunity
that's
right. available to us, like it's available to everyone else.
That is so
totally
true.
Agree.
And
I totally agree.
Yes, go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is, caller, don't hang up, because we're gonna have another question, and we want you to chime in. So can you stay with us for a few minutes?
Sure.
Okay, great. I'm going to put you on hold. Felicia, that is a incredible point that our caller just made about the Jim Crow era not being that long ago. For those of us, Felicia made the comment that you are how old, Felicia? Because we're the same age. So you how old?
I am 53. 53, but you can flip that thing to 35, as my husband would say.
We are not going to entertain your husband foolishness right now. But at 53, I want every one of the listeners to understand that Felicia and I graduated in 1985 from high school. Ruby Bridges integrated the high schools, and she's only 13 years older than you and I. I want that to sink in.
Wow.
We graduated in 85, right? We graduated in 1985. Mm-hmm. Ruby Bridges is only 13 years older than us because she just had a birthday day before yesterday. She just had a birthday.
Mm.
And so on the birthday, she wanted everybody to know. It hasn't been that long. It hasn't been that long. And when you look at the age discrepancies for you, when we get on up, we know 13 years, that's no time. 13 years is when she integrated the schools, and she's only 13 years older than we are, and we graduated in 85. So I need y'all to think about that thing. I need y'all to think about that thing, that this we ain't that far from being in the back of the bus. We're not in the back of the bus.
Yes.
I want to talk about the economic disadvantages of not voting or having a voice in the community when it is compelled to, from the classroom to the courtroom. What does that look like when we talk about not voting or having a voice or holding our representatives and senators and accountable for what goes on in the community when it comes to classroom to the courtroom? Felicia? What does that look like?
When I think about that, it reminds me of something I heard in elections in the debate last night, and Trump consistently said about what Biden did, you know, back when he was a senator, as opposed to the courtroom and how the laws changed back then. And one thing that people, Black Americans, have to understand is that if we don't vote, as I stated before, they will put things on that ballot that could truly affect us. And it could affect whether or not what goes on as far as in the courtroom, what goes on as far as our people, as far as the crime bills and all those type things. Those things didn't just all of a sudden just pop up. Those things were on a ballot somewhere, and we didn't vote. And all of a sudden now, people want to talk about, oh, well, Senator Harris, when she was a senator, you know, she did this and she did that. That stuff wasn't something that she did. Those were some things that was on the ballot, and we did not show up to vote, and those laws passed. And people don't understand is that you have a voice in what goes on in your community, and it goes with you electing your sheriff, electing your people in Congress, your senators, all of that. You have a voice. And if you have a racist sheriff and you do not go to the polls and vote, then when your sheriff get in office and he starts arresting everybody for the smallest crime that they do and put them in jail, and you want to get mad about he's the sheriff, where were you when the vote came for that sheriff? Where were you when it came to a point of, hey, that's not who we want to represent us? Because whoever in these offices, these officials, they represent us. And if we don't show up to the polls, guess what? We are not being represented. And we complain about what happened, but we didn't show up to the polls to make the change. We are the change. And as they say, we the people, we are the people.
Right. And no matter how slighted we are, we're still the people. And I want everybody to understand when we were talking about from the classroom to the courtroom, how everything is 360. When they started to enact private prisons, and you and I had this conversation, the one thing that did was in the identity, they said, if the state of Georgia or Louisiana or whomever, if you allow us to have a private prison, run your prison system, so the state doesn't have to worry about it. Here's a caveat. They say, but you have to sign it with a 20-year contract. Okay, no problem. Mm-hmm. 20 years. We sign it. But the caveat is they said that you have to keep the population of the jail to make it worth our while at a 92 to 94% mm-hmm. rate. How are you going to guarantee for 20 years that I'm going to keep the population of the jail at 90 plus or minus percentile? Well, I'll tell you how. The people that you elected mm-hmm. are in the bed with the people who own the jail. So what used to get us one to three, now get us 3 to 5. What used to get you 3 to 5, now get you 7 to 10. What used to get you 7 to 10, now get you 20 to life. So when you talk about what my vote doesn't do, your vote says I am standing as a buffer between this and that. I might not be able to change everything, but I can control that. So you have to understand who's sleeping with who. We don't know how to watch the money. We don't know how to watch the power. We see things very one way. And we're going to have to be able to unlock that and see the money trail and who's supplying who, who's supporting who. Do your homework when we are talking about
your homework. That's important.
You got to do your mm-hmm. homework, and you got to know who's sleeping with who. Caller 3107. I want to get your opinion on that one. Caller 3107. What do you think about that?
Listen, you guys. Well, you hit a couple of points there. First, let me just take it back really quickly because I wanted to add to that. You guys talked about being in, 1985 and not being so far removed from, from integration. I remember grew up in DeKalb County, and I remember going through the M2M program, and I'm sure if anyone's mm-hmm. familiar with Atlanta, minority to majority, M2M.
Right.
And getting up at the crack of a dawn and to go to a white school because for me to get a better education, because my mom believed I would get the better education there. And she wasn't so far removed because that was the truth. Black schools did not were not equipped, did not have the resources and everything else that our white counterparts did. And I still remember in elementary school going to Rockbridge Elementary in Stone Mountain, Georgia. And if again, people that's familiar, you know, Rockbridge right now, you know, that Stone Mountain area, it definitely doesn't look the same way it did when I went to elementary school. And I still remember there. Yeah, I still remember in the fourth grade, well, I had started going there in the fourth grade, and there was this, and I was probably one of five black students in that school. And I remember this young lady, this girl used to call me the N-word. That was my name. That was just what it was.
Wow.
And I am, I don't mind telling my age, I'm 45. And that's why I tell people, like, listen, you guys think, you know, some of you haven't really, these younger people, they don't really understand how racism works. And, I mean, in the fourth grade, having that experience, and even to going there and being in high school, having experiences, even to my son, who is 23, he graduated from a school in East Cobb, his friends thought it was a great birthday gift, to give him watermelon and chicken for a birthday gift. So, you know, again, just I wanted to just, you know, resonate how this is really real. This is not a plaything.
It is.
This is really
that's
real.
Right.
Some people spirited. That spirit of racism is embedded into so much. You have no idea. But to add to how that affects us politically. You think about these same people that we encountered racism in elementary school, high school, and even now the young folks of today. Those are the same people that's going out to vote, and those are the same people that are representing and picking the representatives that do not represent us. And as a people, we cannot just vote on the major elections. We have to be the people that's voting in every election, every seat, every county, every sheriff. We need to know that a lot of what has been done to us, and I have to be honest here, I'm going to call us to the carpet as a community. We've allowed it to be done because we've not gotten involved.
Let me say this. Let me jump in before you make another point. If you haven't voted since the first election, if you only vote when it's time to vote the president, you the problem.
You are the problem. You better say that.
If you are the problem. You the problem. If you have not voted since we voted for the last president, you're the problem because the Senate turns over every 2 years. See, that's what we got to do election in 2 years. Get all them other folks out, the people who block the vote. So because they don't do it all at the same time, it's the Senate and the presidency, and then you do the House every 2 years. So it's every 2 years, you're supposed to be going to the polls. If you hadn't walked your happy self in the polls in 2 years,
you are the problem.
To a major election, you're the problem. You're the reason why Trump can get away with what he's doing because you allow him to set up. There should never, and I mean ever be an election where there is not someone running opposed because there ain't nobody running against them. Are you kidding me? Somebody somewhere thought that was the job they could do. Make people earn the right to be in that position. There are people, ain't nobody running against them, so they ran unprecedented. What? You mean to tell me you got an office that people vote on and I don't have any other choice? And you could have done a sorry because nobody decided to run against you because nobody knew that office was available because you run on an odd year. There are people in the county in which I serve. They have been doing the job they've been doing 10, 15 years because nobody realizes that is a voted in position because nobody goes to the election every 2 years.
That happens a lot. That happens a lot. That happens a lot. And, you know, it made me think about, you know, when the thing about it, when they're building these private prisons and they're doing these things and they're wondering, like, why are they all of a sudden coming up this stuff? It's not all of a sudden, people. It's not all of a sudden. You didn't vote. You didn't see how detrimental it was for you to get your little happy-go-lucky stuff down there to vote. And I was reading an article a while back when I was studying criminal justice, and I went from criminal justice over to politics and up to psychology. But it talked about how hundreds of school districts across the country employ discipline policies that push students out of the classroom into the criminal justice system. That is crazy that we have a school to prison pipeline.
And because
that,
I was
that,
a teacher. No, go ahead, Carla. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead. Because I was going straight to our educational system. Because
mm-hmm.
when you look at the testing, when in Georgia they have the test. And I remember when they started talking about the test, it was also around the time they started talking about privatizing the justice system, the jail,
the prison,
and
mm-hmm.
the prison system.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it's one of those things where it's one hand. You got, you know, I always tell people you got to look at both hands. If
mm-hmm.
somebody's doing this over here, you better see what's going on the other hand. And you talked about how the percentage, they, you know, in the contract, they have to have a certain
right.
percentage of people that's OSCE rate, basically. And you think about
mm-hmm.
our school systems, and you think about how they have a testing set up, and then you think about how some of our students are falling behind, and it just seems like there's nobody that can help them. I know some educators, and they're always pushing and rallying for their students. How is it
right.
that there's no help for them? There's no help.
But let me just say this. Let me just say this before we move on. I work with intellectual disabilities. And there are two groups that really basically affect this. Now, I'm not saying that white people are not affected. I'm not saying our brown brothers and sisters are not affected. But racial minorities, which is including our brown brothers and sisters, and children with disabilities are disproportionately represented in the school-to-prison pipeline. Those are the ones who are in that pipeline that goes from the school to the prison. And as far as that, African-American students have 3.5 times more likely than their white classmates to be suspended or expelled. My husband worked in a school system, and he tells me all the time that the most of the children that come through are African-American children, and they are 3 to 3.5 times more likely than their white classmates to be suspended or expelled. And this right here is according to the U.S. Department of Education, Office for Civil Rights. So this is not something that's being made up. This is something that's written down. And we as a people have got to open our eyes and realize. But the thing, the question of the matter is, where did it start at? Where do we get control at? And I know this is a little bit off subject, but the control does not even start with elections. When it comes to the prison pipeline, the school to the prison pipeline, the control starts at home, because we allow for our children to be disciplined any kind of way for the least infraction. And the case in point I'm making is this. In my local town, there was a situation where a black kid did one thing and a white kid did another thing, which was, well, let me just say this, a black kid did the same thing the white kid did. The white kid did not get the same infraction that the black child received. Now, why was that okay? Who stood in the gap for that child? If we as parents don't stand in the gap for our kids when they go through the criminal justice system or any kind of system, then we are at fault when we have that school to pipeline. And then it goes on further to our elections and everything because we allow laws to get passed. But it does start with the parents because we can allow some of this foolishness that's going on within the school system that allow our kids to bypass and go straight from the classroom into the prison. That's part of parenting,
ladies,
as well.
Ladies, we are completely out of time. Felicia, I am going to invite you back. Yes, I am going to invite you back. We're going to do a part two. Caller 3107. We have your name. We're going to send you a personal invite to come back, and we're going to do another show in the next day or so, because we have got to finish this conversation. The time has been completely gone. I just like to thank Felicia. I like to thank caller 3107 for calling in. It's the mission of this show to create a more united and strong tribe and community. Remember, there is no peace without justice and no justice without truth. So I'll leave you with this. May the Lord watch between me and thee while we're absent one from another. Oh, my God, this was such a great show. Felicia, you're going to have to come back really quickly before next Friday.
Yes.
So we're going to do an emergency show. Caller 3107, we're going to send you a personal invite so you can come back and talk with us again. It's going to be at a 6:30 hour. So get ready, get ready, get ready. This is Real Talk with Regina Breed. I am loving you guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Peace and blessings to you all. And you guys have a great evening. Good night.
That's it. And make our voices count. Go vote.
Go vote.
This song right here is to